under our business sponsors. Just go to WTRJTheTruth.com.
Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill. I'm calling in from Pensacola, Florida, sitting in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. It's always an honor and privilege for me to host his show for him. And we have a number of things that we're going to be discussing today. If you would like to participate either with a question or your comments, you may join us. The call-in number is 904-831-0917. Again, I'm Mike Hill. I'm a business owner. I've owned an insurance and financial services agency for 33 years now. Prior to that, I was active duty in the Air Force as an officer after graduating from the Air Force Academy in 1980. I've also served in the Florida State Legislature, first elected to the Florida House in 2013 in a special election, subsequently reelected in 2014, and then in 2018. So I've served in the Florida House State Representative for a number of years, a number of terms. And that is how Dr. Youngblood and I actually met. We met in Tallahassee at a James Madison Institute function that they were hosting concerning education in Florida. And Dr. Youngblood and I were at the same luncheon table. We passed business cards between each other. This was back in 2019, and he and I have been close friends ever since. So some of the topics that I'd like to discuss today and what we should keep in mind as we discuss these topics is how should we as Christians respond to these topics? How should we get involved? How should we respond to those who bring it to our attention or express their opinion on it? What opinion should we hold? And of course, it should always be from a biblical perspective, a biblical worldview, not from the humanistic worldview. So some of the items I'd like to discuss today. First, let's talk about the recent Supreme Court decision to overturn affirmative action. It's like, finally, that was done. And so let's talk about that. Related to that is a book that was written by Heather McDonald that's titled When Race Trumps Merit, How the Pursuit of Equity Sacrifices Excellence, Destroys Beauty, and Threatens Lives. So have a nice article here about her book. We can discuss that also. And then would like to talk about, I'm sure some of you have heard about this, and that is the concept of central bank digital currencies. CBDC, central bank digital currencies. And of course, any sane person, any person who does not like government intrusion in your life is going to be completely against that, completely against the government and their central bank digital currencies. We'll talk a little bit about that too. And then I have another article here from Imprimis that comes from Hillsdale College, and it talks about thinking smartly about climate change. And I think the only smart way to think about climate change is to recognize that it is not anthropogenic, that humans are not able to change the climate on their own whim. It is a force that is much larger than we are as human beings. But we'll talk a little bit about that. The article that's in Imprimis and what that author had to say. But first, let's go back to the Supreme Court's overturning of affirmative action. I belong to this group called Project 21. Project 21 is a group of conservative Black leaders throughout Florida, and we believe in the conservative principles of limited government, low taxes, personal freedom, individual responsibility. Those are all basics that if they are implemented within any society, whether it's at the city, county, state, or nation level, it is a recipe for prosperity. And that is something that all of us at Project 21 believe. And so shortly after the Supreme Court issued that ruling on overturning affirmative action, I was asked to submit comments and respond to that Supreme Court decision on behalf of Project 21. And one of the first statements that I made, which is obvious, is that we have this self-evident truth. And that truth is that all men are created equal. And because we are created equal, we have a God-given inalienable right to life, liberty, property, and equal treatment under the law. That those rights are inviolable. And that because of who we are, we have intrinsic value made in the image of God. And because we all are created equal, that does not mean that we are to have equal outcomes. Our founding fathers were brilliant people who put together our Declaration of Independence in 1776, our Constitution, which was ratified in 1787, along with our Bill of Rights shortly afterwards. And those three documents make up the foundation of how we have decided we are going to govern ourselves. And by the way, that U.S. Constitution is the longest national constitution of any other nation on earth. No other nation has a constitution that has lasted as long as ours, which speaks of its excellence, which speaks of its ability to transcend time and how mankind changes over time, because it is based on some foundational principles, among which is that all men are created equal. Now, we pretty much take that for granted nowadays. But when that was first espoused, that was revolutionary. Our founding fathers took that primarily from someone who they deeply admire, and that was John Locke. John Locke was a British philosopher who wrote a two-volume set of treaties of good government. If you look at that original volumes that he put together, in those treaties, you would see in the margins biblical scripture that was placed there where he is justifying how good government should perform. And one of the main things that, oh, by the way, if you try to find that treaties of good government now, it is vastly smaller than when the original that John Locke wrote, and they have taken out all of the biblical references that are placed in there that were in the margins. They've removed them. And that's just a testament of where our education system is today, which in my mind is nearly in shambles because of what the left has done to it, not only here in the United States, but in other developed places around the world. So our founding fathers took John Locke's thought process and applied it and put it in our Declaration of Independence. By the way, you cannot separate our Declaration of Independence from our Constitution. They are inextricably tied together. The 27 grievances listed in the Declaration of Independence, the solution to those grievances can be found in our Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. So they're tied together. And everyone is pretty familiar with the part of the preamble to the Declaration of Independence that states that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator. This is something God has given us with certain inalienable rights. These are God-given rights, intrinsic rights. You are born with these. In fact, before your birth, you have these rights, including the right to life. And that is why we must abolish abortion, not only in Florida, but in the United States and in the world. Abortion is a horrific, terrible way of murdering babies in the womb. Those who are pre-born, those who are made in the image of God, wonderfully and fearfully made in the womb. We must stop that because government has no right to decide if someone, an innocent person, is going to die simply because of their position of where they are in a woman's womb. And this woman, some kind of way we have it in our culture now, have determined, they have gotten it in their mind, it's a depraved way of thinking, that they somehow have a right to murder that baby in their womb. And they say it's a constitutional right, which is it is not. And thank goodness the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, overturned the Roe v. Wade decision, which was a made-up decision, saying that there was somehow a constitutional right for a woman to murder the baby that is inside her, saying that it was some sort of right to privacy. Just because in your womb doesn't mean you have a private right to murder that baby. Just like as if that baby was in your home or in your bedroom, and you don't have a private right to murder that baby there. So the U.S. Supreme Court overturned that insane decision, but it did not end abortion. What it did instead was it moved it back to the state level. Now, we as a state, we must tackle this, and it's happening all over the U.S. now. Various legislative bodies are passing laws to either restrict or outlaw abortion altogether. And the demoniacs on the left are fighting it tooth and nail, including here in Florida, where they are trying to put together an amendment to be placed in the Florida Constitution, giving a woman a right to murder a baby. Insane. And we must block that and we must stop it. But those God-given inalienable rights of life, liberty, and property, you'll see it written in the Declaration as a pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, government is instituted among men, deriving their just powers by the consent of the governed. In other words, the only reason why government is to exist is to secure our God-given rights of life, liberty, and property. And so part of that God-given right, saying that we are all equal, does not mean that we are to have equal outcomes. That is not what it meant at all. And when John Locke talked about all men being created equal, he was not referring to equity at all. What he was referring to was that simply because kings, queens, and others were born to what they called royal families, did not make them any better than anyone else who was a farmer who was simply trying to raise their family. God made us all equal. And that is exactly what our founding fathers said. This is what we're going to use as the basis to build this great nation. And God blessed that. He blessed them with what they were doing. He shed his grace on his great nation. It grew and prospered, has now become the most powerful, the most magnificent, the most benevolent nation the world has ever seen. And it is such a privilege to be a U.S. citizen. And what we must do is protect, guard what we have here, and not let it be overturned by those on the left who have been completely infiltrated with the evil of communism, where the basic of communism is this concept of equity, not equality, but equity. If you have more than someone else, they want to forcibly take it from you and give it to someone else who has no right to it, who didn't earn it, who is not able at all to have justification for taking what you have earned, your liberty, your property. They have no right to it at all. Okay, so it was such a great decision that our Supreme Court made to get rid of affirmative action, which is nothing more than equity, trying to derive equal outcomes based on disparate situations. Now, there's a great article that was put out by Victor Davis Hanson, a professor, brilliant man, by the way, and he just wrote this yesterday, and he has given us 10 reasons why affirmative action died. And I'm going to go through each of those. Again, if you would like to join in the conversation, you may call in at 904-831-0917. That's 904-831-0917. And you can go ahead and express your thought, your concerns, or if you have a question you would like to share with the listening audience. And again, I'm Mike Hill, sitting in for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Okay, the end, here we go back to Victor Davis Hanson's article. And it starts off with, the end of affirmative action was inevitable. Thank goodness. The only surprise was that such intentions gone terribly wrong lasted so long. First of all, one of the first reasons he listed was that supporters of racial preferences always push back the goalpost for the program's success. Was institutionalized reverse bias to last 20 years, 60 years, or ad infinitum? Parity became defined as an absolute equality of result. If equity was not obtained, then only institutionalized racism explained disparities, and only reverse racism was deemed the cure. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, you do not heal one wound by creating another. There was racism that was practiced in America for a number of years. Slavery was here, a great stain on our nation. And I also want to mention that slavery had been an institution around the world for all time. And we, as the United States of America, got rid of slavery. We abolished it. And that was a catalyst for it ending in many places around the world. Unfortunately, it is still going on right now in many nations. We see it in Africa. We see it in the Middle East. We see it in Southeast Asia. And we are also seeing it right here in the United States in the form of human sex trafficking, and it is a scourge that we must get rid of. Now, back to the article. The second reason why Victor David Hansen mentioned that affirmative action died was affirmative action was imposed on the back end in adult hiring and college admissions. However, to achieve parity, remediation early at the K-12 school level would have been the only solution. Yet, such intervention was made impossible by teachers' unions, the rise of identity politics, and government entitlements. All were supposed to oppose school choice. All were opposed. Teachers' unions, identity politics, and government entitlements were all opposed to school choice, self-help programs, critiques of cultural impediments, or restrictions on those blanket entitlements. Third, of why affirmative action died. Class, the true barometer of privilege, was rendered meaningless. Surrealism followed. The truly privileged Barack and Michelle Obama and Meghan Markle lectured the country on its unfairness, as if they had it rougher than the impoverished deplorables of East Palestine, Ohio, who I'm sure you are all aware of, train derailment which took place there and those chemicals that were spilled, and then some brainiac, a government official, made the decision to set it on fire and create a climate catastrophe, an environmental catastrophe. That was horrible, what happened there. And those people in East Palestine are still dealing with that. But we have those who led privileged lives, like Barack and Michelle Obama and Meghan Markle, and I would also throw in there LeBron James, who led these privileged lives, and they want to lecture the rest of us on the unfairness of America. I'm reading from an article by Victor Davis Hansen on 10 reasons why affirmative action died. So the fourth reason, affirmative action supporters could never square the circle of proving that racial prejudices didn't violate the spirit of the Declaration of Independence and the text of the Constitution. Amen. That's what I started our show off with, the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, and the text of our Constitution, where we lay out how we are going to govern ourselves by treating everyone equal. Back to his article, what they were left with was the same lame argument that because long ago the 90% white majority had violated their own foundational documents, then such past bad unconstitutional bias could legitimately be rectified by present day good unconstitutional bias. Isn't that nonsense? But that is exactly what those on the left did. Fifth, again, I'm reading from an article by Victor Davis Hansen, brilliant professor. He writes for the Hoover Institution, part of Stanford University, and also he's a part of Hillsdale College. Whenever I see something written by Victor Davis Hansen, I jump all over it, and I would encourage you to do the same thing. And to buy his books that he's written. He's written books on history and on economics, and a brilliant mind that you can learn a lot from. And he's talking about 10 reasons why affirmative action had to have died, part of the Supreme Court decision that was recently made. And here's the fifth reason. Supporters never adequately explain why the sins of prior generations fell on their descendants who grew up in the post-civil rights era. Nor could they account for why those who had never experienced institutionalized racism, much less Jim Crow apartheid or slavery, were to be compensated collectively for the suffering of long dead individuals. No wonder 70% of the American people in many polls favored ending affirmative action, including a half of Black Americans who approve of ending affirmative action. 70% of the American population as a whole and half of Black Americans said we should end affirmative action. He touches a little bit here on being compensated for, and let's talk about that a bit, where this whole idea of affirmative action has morphed into other areas, including diversity, equity, and inclusion, that a lot of governments and businesses are implementing into their business programs as a way of trying to correct past discrepancies, which is wrong, but they're trying it anyway. And it has also morphed over to this idea of reparations. I was speaking on a talk radio program out of Los Angeles a couple of evenings ago, and we talked about that idea of reparations for Black Americans because of so-called Black grievances, and how the Supreme Court overturning this whole idea of affirmative action really just got rid of this idea of reparations. What the Supreme Court essentially said was, you cannot make your decisions on who's going to be admitted into these colleges based on their ethnicity or of the color of their skin. And so that is exactly what reparations is based on, where they want to give people money simply because of their ethnicity, based on the color of their skin. And because the Supreme Court overturned that, because they threw that out the window, there goes this whole idea of reparations also. And I can assure you that Governor Gavin Newsom exhaled a huge sigh of relief because now he has cover to get rid of this nonsense they were pushing out in California, where they were saying they were going to give up to $1 million to each individual as a reparations payment because of slavery that had existed over 150, ended over 150 years ago in the United States. And so this is going to get rid of this whole crazy notion of reparations also. Gavin Newsom now has cover where he can say, hey, look, guys, I supported you, but the Supreme Court says we can't. And that's the law of the land. So now we are going to have to end this idea of reparations. And then I'm sure he wiped the sweat off his brow as he left the room because of the lunatics out in California who are trying to press this idea of reparations. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Mike Hill, sitting in for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood on Let's Face the Issues. And we're going to continue our discussion after our break, after the top of the hour. I would invite you to join with us. Call in. The number is 904-831-0917. We have a lot more to talk about, including the ending of affirmative action. We're going to talk also about climate change and also talk about the central bank digital currencies. Don't turn your dial. We'll be right back after the top of the hour.
This is Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood from First Conservative Baptist Church and Conservative Theological University in Jacksonville, Florida. To learn more, visit conservative.edu.
WAYL St. Augustine, WATY Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Jason Walker. Russian forces have targeted Kyiv again with a barrage of Iranian-made drones. Explosions earlier today heard in different parts of the city. Officials say buildings have been damaged and several people have been hospitalized with shrapnel wounds. President Biden closing out his five-day trip to Europe today, highlighting the stay, talks with key NATO leaders. Record monsoon rains have killed more than 100 people in northern India this week, and authorities say scores of people are missing. Dangerous weather all across America. At least one tornado touching down yesterday near Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. In Vermont, they're still cleaning up from the floods. And in California, record heat wave continues to scorch the area. This is SRN News.
Do you have earned college credits but no diploma? Would you like to finish your certified degree program? Conservative Theological University can help. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE to schedule your interview appointment. Please leave your contact information for the admission staff to reach out to you. Today's the day. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE for Conservative Theological University.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on three regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on two stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. It's a privilege and honor for me to always sit in for Dr. Youngblood, who's away just for a couple of days. Dr. Youngblood and I have been friends for many years, and I consider it an honor to sit in and host his show for him today. I'm calling from Pensacola, Florida, and I currently own an insurance and financial services agency. I've been doing that for 33 years. Prior to that, I was an officer in the Air Force for 10 years after graduating from the Air Force Academy in 1980. I also served several terms in the Florida State Legislature, Florida State House, from 2013 until 2020. And currently what we're talking about, just before the break, ladies and gentlemen, we were talking about the Supreme Court decision to overturn affirmative action. And it was something that was long overdue, should have been done, but it was done. And thank goodness that it was. And I'm going through an article that was written by Professor Victor Davis Hanson on 10 reasons why affirmative action died. And we went through the first five reasons why affirmative action died, and we're going to proceed with the sixth. If you would like to join us with your thoughts or with your questions, join in on the conversation, feel free to call in at 904-831-0917. Again, 904-831-0917. Okay, this article, 10 Reasons Why Affirmative Action Died, written by Victor Davis Hanson, gives us the six reasons. Okay, the first five you went through, and I'm sorry that you missed that, but let's go on with the sixth reason why. Number six, there never was a rainbow coalition of shared non-white victimhood. That was a concept necessary to perpetuate the premise of white privilege, white supremacy, and rage, so integral to race-based reverse discrimination. More than a dozen ethnicities earn more per capita than do whites. So this whole idea of a rainbow coalition of people who are fighting against white supremacy never even existed. It was a myth. And it's brilliant for Dr. Victor Hanson to point that out. He's exactly right. I think that whole myth of a rainbow coalition was started by the fraud Jesse Jackson, and where he had this whole idea of he could shake down these companies by going in demanding that they hire more minorities, specifically blacks, that they hire more blacks because of past racial discrimination. And if they did not, then of course they will call a boycott, bring it to the nation's attention that they refuse to do it, and would demand payment from these corporations. And these corporations would kowtow to Jesse Jackson and his Rainbow Coalition organization and gave him hundreds of millions of dollars. Jesse Jackson became a rich man off of that whole fraud idea of Rainbow Coalition. Now, Victor David Hanson mentions that more than a dozen ethnicities earn more per capita than do whites. And he goes on to state that Asians have been subject to coerced internment, immigration restrictions, and zoning exclusions. Yet on average, they do better than whites economically and enjoy lower suicide rates and longer life expectancies. Here in Pensacola, I'll add another category too, low incarceration rates. Here in Pensacola, we have a relatively large Filipino-American community and a Vietnamese community, and they have a very low incarceration rate, but they also do very well economically because they start their own businesses, and they cherish the family unit. They have children that respect their parents, and because of that, they are living up to the model of what makes a nation great, and that is an intact family that is performing well in school, not getting married, and not having children until after you finish school and until after you're married. So the Asian community, the Vietnamese and Filipino American communities that are here in the Pensacola area of Escambia County are doing very well, just as Dr. Hanson notes in his article. And I'm sure Pensacola is not the only area where you can see that these economics and that these ability for the Asian community to do well thrives, not just here. You'll see it in many places across the U.S. Now, back to his article. The arguments for affirmative action never explain why Asians and other minorities who face discrimination outperform the majority white population. As a result, affirmative action ended up discriminating against Asians on a premise they were too successful. And in fact, that was the whole premise of the lawsuit that was brought before the Supreme Court. It was a group of Asian students who were denied admissions into Harvard University and the University of North Carolina, two prestigious universities. They were denied admissions even though they qualified, they were more than qualified to attend, but they were denied admissions because they said that their doing so would not allow them to admit other minorities such as Blacks or Hispanics. And so even though the Blacks and Hispanics had lower college admission test scores, did not perform as well in high school, they were admitted, allowed admission into Harvard and University of North Carolina. And these Asians were told that they could not simply because they were Asian. And so they sued. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said no and said this whole idea of affirmative action, of trying to correct past performances is not legal, it is not constitutional, and they threw it out. So let's go to back to Dr. Hansen's article and number 7 of his 10 reasons why affirmative action died. So number 7, no one ever experienced, I'm sorry, let me say it differently. No one ever explained when affirmative action was to apply. Blacks, for example, were vastly overrepresented in merit-based professional football and basketball. Yet no one demanded proportional representation to address such disparate impact, despite underrepresentation of all other demographics. Yet, if Blacks were underrepresented in baseball, then reparatory measures were supposed to address that fact, even if Latino players were overrepresented and whites underrepresented as well. No one in our race-obsessed culture, of course, objected that white males died at twice their demographics in combat in Afghanistan and Iraq. That's an excellent point that Dr. Hansen is, Professor Hansen is making there, that the whole concept of this affirmative action was being applied not uniformly everywhere, but only where the left wanted it to. It's insane. And so, and he correctly points out that in the professional sports arena, such as football and basketball, that Blacks were overrepresented, but no one said that, hey, affirmative action, we need to have white players here. Or in baseball, where Blacks were underrepresented, and they screamed that we need to take measures to address that, even though it was Latino players who were overrepresented. But then he makes that the whole idea, this whole concept of that white males died at twice their demographics in combat in Afghanistan and Iraq. And by the way, I might also add that the majority of those white males came from the South, Southeast United States. And right now, we have within our military organization a lack of people wanting to volunteer for our force. We have one of the greatest fighting forces that this world has ever seen, and it's all voluntary and has been for a number of years, a number of decades now, where it's been all voluntary. But more recently, because of the Biden administration, because of the Biden Department of Defense, we are seeing that they cannot recruit enough volunteers because they are passing on this nonsense of race-based ideology in our military. This whole nonsense of pushing LGBTQ onto our military. And because of that, we are seeing that people are not volunteering to defend this great nation. And I don't blame them. Until we get rid of this illegitimate regime, which is in office, and I'm referring to the Biden administration and his Department of Defense, turn it back over to those who are constitutionally based, those who love our nation because of what it is and what it stands for, then I would not encourage my children to join the military. Even though I served in the military, I was, as I mentioned before, I had the honor of attending the Air Force Academy and served 10 years active duty. And during my tenure active duty, it was relatively a time of peace for our nation. It was 1980 to 1990. Wasn't until shortly after I had an honorable separation from the Air Force so that I could start my own private business that the Gulf War broke out. And I volunteered to go, but I was never chosen as a reservist back at that time. My father served 26 years as an enlisted member in the Air Force, and my grandfather, and he served in the Vietnam War and the Korean War. And my grandfather, who was an Army enlisted individual, served in World War I. I also had a son who served in the Marines and was stationed on a ship off the coast of Libya, where he saw combat action. And so even though we have a legacy in my family of serving in the military, right now, I would not encourage any of my family members to join the military based on what we're seeing coming out of the Biden administration and the Biden Department of Defense. Let's get back to the article written by Victor Davis Hanson on 10 reasons why affirmative action died. Number eight. In our increasingly intermarried mass immigration society, few could adjudicate who was what, or much less what standard gave one racial preference. In lunatic fashion, pink blonde Senator Elizabeth Warren became Harvard's first Native American law professor due to her high cheekbones. Light-skinned Latinos were considered marginalized, while some darker Italians or Greeks were not. Great point that Professor Hanson brings up here. Who is going to decide who is going to receive affirmative action where we are seeing, as he states, increasingly intermarried mass immigration society? I'm a Black American. I have three adult children. Blessed that we have them all. They all are grown, married, and doing very well here in the Pensacola area. Blessed to have them living so close because I also have three grandchildren. So of my three adult children, I also have a white daughter-in-law, and I have a white son-in-law, and each of those have blessed us with grandchildren. So I have three granddaughters, who are half black and half white. So are they to be identified as minorities or are they to be identified as white? And who is going to make that determination? What gives you the authority to make that determination when it should be self-determined? They can decide for themselves, or they can decide, I'm neither. I am a human being made in the image and likeness of God, and not be obsessed with this whole color, race-based thing that we're seeing in America today. Okay, back to Victor Davis Hanson's article, 10 Reasons Why Affirmative Action Died. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to join the discussion, you can call in at 904-831-0917. Okay, reason number 9. An odious wokeism absorbed affirmative action and changed it into something even more abhorrent, as the original spirit of the civil rights movement was trashed. So Americans were asked to stomach a return to distasteful, segregated dorms, separate but equal graduation ceremonies, and racially exclusive workshops. Indeed, he makes such a great point there. That's where we have at some, in fact, at Harvard University, I believe that was one of the places where they wanted to have separate but equal graduation ceremonies. And at some of our other places where they wanted to have segregated dorms. And then we have in our workforce this idea of racially exclusive workshops. Utter nonsense. And by the way, I think this whole thing, well, before I go off on that, let's get to his 10th and final reason that Professor Victor Davis Hanson lists as 10 reasons why affirmative action died. Number 10, and finally, affirmative action was insidiously destroying meritocracy, that hallmark American value of tribally blind inclusivity at once explained why the nation outshone the world by discarding the old class prejudices and privileges of Europe. But increasingly, this value seemed to have been abandoned. In other words, back to how I started the show at the end of the last hour, and as we started this article, brilliantly written by Victor Davis Hanson, that all men are created equal. And here in America, we were getting rid of the idea that we discarded the old European idea that all people were not created equal, but that if you were born into a certain class of nobility, then you were better than someone else. Well, we got rid of that, and thank goodness we did. And now throwing out this whole idea of affirmative action, we are also saying that we are not going back to that. When Stockton Rush, the late captain and inventor of the ill-fated Titan deep sea explorer, was quoted post-mortem bragging that his company had no need of old white guys with long military expertise in submarining, Americans realized that woke racial discrimination was not just repulsive, but could get you killed. A nation whose pilot training, medical school admissions, and military high command promotions were increasingly adopting racial, gender, or sexual orientation essentialism was a country headed for the sort of third world tribalism characteristic of failed states abroad. In the end, the court finally stepped in to end this unconstitutional aberration, much like the old Soviet commissars than our ideals of equality under the law. The American people concurred, and the only regret seemed to be, why not sooner? Amen. Victor Davis Hanson wrote an excellent article, and he goes on to mention towards the end of this how this whole idea of affirmative action has taken root into our workforce with diversity, equity, and inclusion, where people are not being promoted, not put in positions based on merit, where decisions on how we are going to perform as a company because we want to earn the highest profit, because we want to behave in a fiduciary responsibility and return the best return on investment to shareholders, that instead of doing that, we're going to try and use this whole affirmative action idea of a diversity, equity, and inclusion, and promote people, put people in positions that they were not qualified for, but simply trying to satisfy this whole idea of affirmative action, of trying to fix a problem that happened in the past with a solution today, when the problem has already left, is an idea that needs to go away. We need to get rid of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workforce. It is nothing more than a form of communism. It is nothing more than a form of greed and envy. It's where someone sees what someone else has, they want it, and they want to take it from them, whether they earned it or deserved it. We must get rid of that. It is not fair. And as Victor Davis Hanson pointed out, when you have someone like Stockton Rush, who made the statement that he did not want old white guys with long military expertise in submarining helping him design his submarine, it caused a disaster for him. And it was such a shame. So what is the solution, ladies and gentlemen? I believe the solution is something you can find in our founding documents and what our founding fathers put together, and they left for us a legacy in the form of a monument. It's called the National Monument to the Forefathers, and it was built to represent the biblical worldview of the Pilgrims. This national monument is in Plymouth, Massachusetts, overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, facing towards the east. The National Monument to the Forefathers consists of five main figures. Faith is set as the central and largest figure, with smaller figures of morality, law, education, and liberty. And flanking each figure are additional images which help to clarify each figure's meaning. Also featured on the monument are the passenger list of the Mayflower, a quote from Pilgrim Governor William Bradford, and smaller engravings depicting important moments in a pilgrim's journey. This 150-foot monument was completed. The cornerstone was set in 1859. Look it up, ladies and gentlemen. That is the answer to what we are battling right now in the United States. Don't be afraid. Stand up. Be firm. The Lord our God is with us. He is on our side, and it is with Him that we live and move and have our being. This is Mike Hill sitting in for Dr. Dean A. Youngblood. Have a blessed day.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University.
12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with them. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships.